Welcome, everyone, to episode 212 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to start our By Felicia segment, which is basically the Inside the NBA's version of Gone Fishing. So we're going to say goodbye to the top tankers of the league this year, since we are probably not going to talk about them all that much until the draft lottery. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
I should really be asking you that question, Brian.
Yeah, here's the downside of being married to a doctor, is that they are exposed to all sorts of weird diseases, and then they bring them home. And then 9 times out of 10, you still don't get sick because your immune system is made of steel. But then the one time, you do get sick. So I'm getting over a cold, so I apologize in advance for me sounding stuffy and sick. But otherwise, good.
Yeah, I love that you just blamed that on a poor patient coming in. Seeking refuge from a cold world and getting medical attention, and now you're just crabbing on them. Well done,
Brian. Absolutely. It's some pain-seeking veteran, 100%. He was just trying to get some oxy. He came in with a cold and now got my entire household sick. I think even Nori is sick right now.
Oh, no!
Yeah, I don't know. He's been very lazy the last couple days. He might just be sympathy sick with me, which I appreciate.
Why do I feel worse when you tell me that Nori is sick?
I do too. It's horrible. Yeah. I've been very sad the last few days because he's just like not moving. And we're like, are you paralyzed or are you just lazy? I can't tell.
Poor dog.
I know. So before we get to the tankers, I think we need to start by just sending our best wishes to Yusuf Nurkic, who suffered a gruesome leg injury on Monday, called back to the Paul George Team USA thing from a few years ago.
Right.
Compound fracture of the tibia and fibula. Thankfully, no nerve or muscle damage. They did the surgery on Tuesday, and that's good news. But we he's out indefinitely. He's definitely out for the rest of the season. We got to assume he's going to miss at least part of 2019-20. So really just sending our best to him. Hope he recovers well. I mean, the guy was having a monster season this year. It's a huge loss to Portland. I'm glad he got the bag before this happened. But, you know, just I hope he can come back even stronger than he was this year, because he was the key. Like, I slept on Portland for the 18th straight season, and he was one of the biggest keys to why they're going to be in the playoffs yet again. So prayers up, Yusuf.
Yeah, and I mean, just one note. I'm seeing a lot of the Paul George comparisons, and people are already going, you know, the route of, well, if Paul George came back and became even better, obviously, you know, this is going to happen with Nurkic. Like, I get what they're saying, but, like, that's just putting a lot of pressure on a young man who just went through a very traumatic injury. So, like, don't put that on him. I don't think that's fair to him at all.
It also took Paul George a lot of time before he reached this level. Like, he suffered that injury in 2014, and now, right, 4 years later, he's looking like an MVP candidate. Like, he played, I think, 6 games his first season back. And yes, he suffered the injury a few months after Nurkic did. So there's reason to be optimistic that Nurkic could potentially make it back earlier than George did, you know, this coming season. But yeah, like, I was in this debate with a couple fantasy basketball guys yesterday. Like, we just have to basically write off the 2019-2020 season for him. It's much like DeMarcus Cousins with the Achilles. Like, hopefully he makes it back at some point. Hopefully he resembles his old self at some point. But anyone expecting him to be what he was this year at any point next year consistently, that's wishful thinking. Like, look at Gordon Hayward. I mean, he suffered that ankle injury the first game of last season, and he spent the entire year, you know, he shows some flashes, but he has yet to string together, like, a consistent month of, oh yeah, the old Gordon Hayward is back. And I hope that that's not the case for Nurkic, but I'm concerned that it will be.
I wonder if it's harder for perimeter players because of the added responsibility of ball handling and initiating the offense and playing from outside and in.
Yeah.
Than whereas a Yusuf Nurkic type who plays primarily close to the basket and doesn't rely a lot on athleticism if he just has an easier time coming back in that sense, in terms of still being able to rebound the basketball, still being able to score from the inside. Like, I get it's a long road ahead, and I'm not putting any pressure on him in terms of, hey, what he's going to come back like. But I do think his game is well-suited to absorb this type of injury.
Yeah, I hope so. But I think a lot of these injuries, we've seen a lot with Hayward this season, a lot of it is mental. And, like,
yeah,
didn't he break his leg just going for a rebound?
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, you're right. That's a big part of his game is just rebounding and blocking shots. But in the back of his mind, he's going to be thinking, like, oh, man, every time I jump for the ball, this could happen again. I mean, hopefully it won't. Mm. The bone should come back even stronger. So, like, you know, hopefully he gets over that in due time. But I do think that could be in the back of his head for a while. I think they're not going to... I mean, he was only playing 27.4 minutes a game this season already. So it's not like he was playing 35, but they're not going to throw him back into a high usage role right away. You know, they're going
right.
to gradually ramp him back up. Like, it'll be 10, 15, 20, 25 minutes. Make sure he's good, and then we can talk about getting him back into, like, the full-time starting center role. But, like, Zach Collins just became that much more important to the Portland Trailblazers for the next year.
I'll say.
Yeah.
Well, can we just focus on how productive Nurkic was when healthy? Yeah. Like, 27 minutes a game, that's not a lot. That's barely more than a half a game.
Right.
And he put up 15, 10, three plus assists, and I believe almost a block and a half.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It's great because, you know, when he came over after the trade deadline in 2016-17, he put up very similar numbers in kind of similar time. And then last season, I don't want to say he took a step back necessarily, but, like, he wasn't as impactful as he was after the trade deadline. But then this season, I mean, he really, like, I don't think anyone's going to say, when you're thinking of, like, the best big threes in the league, I don't think anyone, Portland comes to mind right away. But, like, Dame, CJ, and Nurkic is a big three to some degree. And, like, Nurkic really rounded that out. It's not just the Dame and CJ show, which it was, you know, in the playoffs last year, and it's why they got spanked by the Pelicans in the first round. Like, now Nurkic gave them that interior presence that they really desperately needed.
Yep. I mean, look, if he comes back and Zach Collins develops like a legitimate three-point shot and proves able to play big minutes, you can probably survive with him at the four. Yeah. I understand it's going to be a somewhat slow big man lineup, but it could prove beneficial in the long term, assuming, of course, that, you know, Nurkic come back fully healthy, which we hope for. Better even. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's young, which is the one thing working for him. He's only 24. Mm-hmm. He doesn't turn 25 till August. So, like, even if this next year ends up being somewhat of a lost season, like, he's still got a long career ahead of him, hopefully.
Right. And while I say all this, just no pressure.
Yeah. Right. Well, no, I mean, that's the good thing is, you know, there it's not like he's 29 and, like, he's on the downswing of his career already. Like, he's still young enough that, you know, he'll have time to really capitalize on his prime, assuming he comes back healthy and doesn't have any, you know, long-term repercussions for this thing. And to your point about, you know, his averages in limited minutes, he and Kevin Love are the only two guys in the league this year averaging at least 15 and 10 in less than 28 minutes a game.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a good company.
Yeah.
Okay, with all of that said, now let's turn our attention to the top tankers of the league. So this is the start of our Buy Felicia segment, which we will do for every team over the next couple months, because, you know, after these teams get eliminated from the playoffs or playoff contention, in the case of these guys, we're just not going to talk about them all that much until, you know, for these teams, until the draft lottery or until the draft, and then, like, even for the playoff teams, we're going to be focusing on the ones that are still alive. So let's start with the worst of the worst, the New York Knicks. And for all of these teams, I want us to first focus on the positives that came out of the season and then what they need to address moving forward. So for these teams in particular, how they need to reshape their roster this summer, the big decisions they face to get them back into playoff contention.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for the Knicks, the big positive for me, at least in terms of players on the roster, is Mitchell Robinson.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, what a steal this guy is looking like.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about him a little bit earlier in the year, but, you know, his per-game averages don't jump off the screen just because he's only averaging 19 minutes a game. But then you look at he's averaging 2.4 blocks in those 19 minutes. And it's not even just rim protection. Like, he's going out, he's one of the rare guys who could go out and block three-pointers with any sort of consistency. Like, he is just one of these, like, monster athletes. He's still so raw, too. Like, that's the best part. This guy, he doesn't really understand positioning and how to, like, play basketball well. So just imagine what happens in a couple years when he's got more NBA experience and has more confidence. Like, this guy could very well be the Knicks' long-term answer at center.
I'm going to give you a stat here for Mitchell Robinson.
Okay, I'm excited.
And it's on a per 36 minutes basis.
Okay.
So it's a cheating a little bit because he's only averaging 19 minutes a game.
Sure.
But per 36, he's averaging a combined 6 steals and blocks per game.
That seems good. I don't know.
Yeah. That seems kind of good. Yeah. I like it. No, but he's just so active. He covers the entire length of the floor. And I have a feeling that he's going to be one of those guys. If he isn't already, actually, I just haven't really paid attention to it, where, you know, offenses do something similar to him as they do with Kawhi, like basically try to avoid him.
Yeah.
Like, oh, is he on the right side of the court? Let's swing to the weak side.
Right.
Like, let's go to the left side. Like, let's get it away from him.
Yeah.
In every means possible.
Yeah. I mean, he's just so long that, like, he can really... I think he leads the league in three-point blocks. It's either him or Ben Simmons, but I think it's him, which is outrageous for a seven-footer.
Like, who's averaging 19 minutes a game.
Right. You just don't see these guys. I mean, you think of a seven-footer, and you think close to the basket, not great lateral agility. Like, he's got it. I mean, he's really impressed me more than I expected, and I'm just so forever grateful that the Boston Celtics did not pick him. I remember when he was slipping down the draft board, I saw, like, he was in the 20s, and the Celtics were coming up, and I was like, oh my god, if they pick this guy, it's over. And thankfully, they went with Time Lord instead, and now he slipped to the Knicks, but it was a really, like, kudos to the Knicks. It was a great pick.
Yeah, it was. And I think a lot of it was just not, you know, teams weren't able to watch him play.
Yeah.
Because he didn't play college basketball. He was practicing alone. He was training and getting ready. So I think that just caused a lot of the hesitation about him. But he was always intriguing. Like, just his physical profile alone was always terribly exciting. I mean, when you have a legit seven-footer who can run like the wind and jump like Vince Carter, like, at some point you just have to get intrigued by that, right?
Yeah.
And if you can then squeeze out some kind of basketball related talent of him, like, you do it. And lo and behold, look at him right now. One of the I want to say projected best defenders in the league in a couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, he could definitely factor into that conversation for sure.
Yeah. I think that's totally fair. While he's also, like, he doesn't turn the ball over.
Yeah.
He takes smart shot. Like, he's shooting 68% from the field.
Right.
Like, who does this remind you of? It reminds you of a guy who's already on the roster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a little bit.
A little DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah. Just a little bit.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's great that DeAndre Jordan is there to, like, mentor him for at least a couple months. We'll see what happens this summer, of course. But, you know, who better for this kid to learn from than, like, this? You're right. This was DeAndre Jordan back in his early days, was just like this springy, explosive big man that could just be a double-double machine. Like,
you should just teach him to say, who you got at the free throw line, because apparently it's working.
Yeah. All right, so Mitchell Robinson, great find.
Yeah.
Any other reason for optimism on the Knicks roster currently?
Yeah, so in your outline, you were very negative about the Knicks, and I get it, but I want to pat myself on the back just a little bit, because I did mention Alonzo Trier after the draft.
Yep.
And he's been good. And, you know, 11 points a game in just under 23 minutes, 39 from three, 80 from the line, actually getting to the line quite a bit, 3.5 times per game in those 22.8 minutes. Somewhat of a playmaker at times, primarily an isolation scorer. Not the greatest two-point scorer yet, but that could come in time. I mean, he's 23. Mm-hmm. I like what he brings. He brings some toughness. He brings some creative offensive ability that they don't really have at this point, especially after moving on from Tim Hardaway Jr. Like, look, I wasn't in love with Tim Hardaway Jr., but he was creative. He was, like, free-flowing. Mm-hmm. And they kind of need to have someone like that just to have players who can actually score the basketball.
Right.
Obviously, Damian Dotson as well.
Yeah.
You know, just a shooter who can move. I want to say he's way more of a shooter than Trier is in terms of how he plays. Like, his 3-point field goal percentage is 37, still above league average, but not in the same, you know, tier as Trier. Mm-hmm. But he's more of a natural shooter as opposed to like a slasher or a driver.
Right.
So I think those two kind of complement each other. And if those two guys are, you know, coming off the bench for the Knicks in a couple of years,
mm-hmm.
then that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty decent starting point for a bench.
Yeah, I agree with that. That kind of leads into my question, and we can really go into, like, you know, moving forward. We know the Knicks plan. We'll talk about that in a minute. But just looking at who's currently on the roster, they have a bunch of these young guys. You know, they have Frankie Smokes is there for at least another year or two. Dennis Smith Jr., Kevin Knox, who they drafted in the lottery this year. Trier, Mitchell Robinson's locked up for a while on a really good cheap contract. So he's a keeper. Dotson is locked up at least through next season as well. Who, if anyone, do you think fits this long-term vision for the Knicks?
Oh, that's difficult to answer because we don't know what's going to happen in free agency.
Yeah.
Everything hinges on what they do there or even the draft. Like, if they get number one and take Zion,
right.
that obviously changes the entire outlook of the team. And if they get really, really unlucky and they end up with, like, I don't know, DeAndre Hunter.
Ooh, yeah.
Like that's, no, and he's a fine player.
Right.
But I mean, I'm just saying there's a significant difference in who you end up with.
Yeah.
I mean, then yeah, you might look at it and go, well, that's just a piece and stuff, a centerpiece. And assuming KD goes there, well, then you have the centerpiece and you just need the complementary players around him. And if he doesn't and you end up overpaying for Kemba Walker and Jimmy Butler, then yeah, that also changes things, right? So it's an insanely difficult question at this stage.
Okay, then let me rephrase it. Where are you on Kevin Knox after this rookie season?
All right, so Kevin Knox is he remains intriguing to me in some capacity, because he's versatile. He can play the three and the four, so he's one of those switchy guys. His defense, I think, comes and goes. I know a lot of people are saying he's just atrocious defensively. I think he has games here and there where he shows, you know, some level of competency in terms of rotating, especially when it comes to defensive team schemes. When he's on an island, that's not really going as well, but he's 19 years old. The big thing for me is he doesn't take good shots yet. He doesn't really comprehend what a good shot is quite yet, and that's going to be the biggest challenge. Like, you have to give him the next year and see if there are any improvements in that regard. If he is still hovering under 40% from the field and just taking weird shots and not connecting, then you might consider moving on from him until, you know, the word is out on him.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah. No, I don't think that's... he's taking 36% of his shots are from within 10 feet of the basket. He's taking more from... yeah, like, he's taking more from 10 feet to the three-point line than he is from 0 to 3 feet.
Yeah.
Which is not ideal, obviously, but... I mean, he's
part of that has to be coaching, though.
Right, for sure. I mean, I think David Fizdale has done a spectacular job of just low-key tanking. Like, he had no rhyme or reason to his rotations all year, which I think just made it hard for any of these guys to get comfortable. I mean, Knox didn't start every game. You know, he didn't start for a while at the beginning of the season, was inactive for a couple... I think he had an injury earlier in the year. got put in the starting lineup for three games, then benched until mid-December, and then has been starting ever since. But he's still only been playing, like, you know, 25 or so minutes for a lot of the year. So, like, he just hasn't had the opportunity you would have expected for a really terrible team that has nothing to play for. Like, most of the time you give those guys 30, 35 plus minutes and just say, like, figure it out. Like, this is your time to grow, because, you know, hopefully in a year or two we'll actually have real talent around you. We're not going to need you to be in such a high usage role, but, like, this should be your time to shine. The Knicks have not gone that direction, but yeah, I mean, I'm not giving up on him either. I think you're right. It does depend on who they bring in. I don't think he profiles ever as, like, a number one option, or I don't think a number one option on a good team, but could he be a complimentary scorer on a good team? Sure. I buy that.
Do the Knicks have the best bench in the league who they right now are just using as starters? No, really, when you think about it, when you look at that team, you look at Emmanuel Mudiay, right? Averaging almost 15 a game, not doing so particularly efficiently, not a strong playmaker, you know. And then you have Noah Vonleh averaging 8.5 and almost 8 rebounds in 25 minutes. And we already mentioned Trier and Dotson. So, like, let's assume that entire group is the bench for in a couple years. Like, that would be a perfectly fine bench to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the problem is Mudiay is a restricted free agent this summer. Vonleh's a free agent. And then Trier and Dotson are only locked up for one more year each. So
exactly.
They'll get expensive, whereas you've got Knox under contract for three more years, Dennis Smith and Frankie Smokes for at least two more years. Where are you on Frankie Smokes?
I don't want to be mean to Frankie Smokes, but I'm kind of waiting for him to hit his stride a little bit. I don't know if the Knicks is the team that really unlocks him.
Right.
He's maybe a second contract type of guy. Like Ricky, who we had on last time, he kind of alluded there are some players who are just that much better when they reach their second contract.
Yeah.
And, you know, I certainly agree with that statement, and I think Frankie Smokes could be one of those guys. It just doesn't work in New York. And to be fair, like, he's competing with Dennis Smith Jr. and Emmanuel Mudiay. And before that, it was Trey Burke. So there's just been so many guys in and out, and he hasn't really gotten the opportunity, at least this year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's got some Chris Dunn in his game. Like, he's an athletic, defensive-minded point guard who just is not a natural playmaker or a natural scorer.
Right.
And that just puts a pretty hard... That hard caps his ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there is a role for him in the league. I don't think the Knicks are the team that will figure out how to use him correctly. And I think the sooner he gets out of New York, the better. But
I want him in Memphis.
Ooh, that'd be fun. Yeah, I like that. I mean, like, his shooting efficiency is... It was horrible as a rookie, and it got even worse this year. So, like, it would not surprise me if the Knicks are ready to cut bait on him already. But, yeah, I mean, I do think on the right team, he has a role. It's just no matter what happens with the Knicks this summer, I don't know if they're the ones to figure it out. So let's go in quickly before we move on to their summer plans. Obviously, the dream is Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. I mean, do you think Kevin Durant's going there?
I mean... I wasn't really on board with it for a long while, simply because I actually look at Kevin Durant. You know, a lot of people look at KD and they focus on, you know, the burner accounts and him being upset and whatnot. I look at KG as a very bright, you know, human being.
Yeah.
I think he's very, very smart. I think he's clever. When he talks about basketball, you can also sense just the wisdom that comes from understanding the game. It just oozes out of him. Mm-hmm. Like, he's legitimately smart.
Yeah.
And so whenever the Knicks were brought up, I was like, I just disregarded them because, hey, KD's smart. He knows what's up. Like, why would he go there?
Right.
But the chatter has just grown so intense, and you just hear from everyone, like every of the big timers, you know, the Lowe's and the Howard Becks and Voges and all of that, you know, it might happen. Like, he's looking at New York, which, you know, if that turns out to be true, and we have another LeBron, so L.A., kind of move lined up where it's just like telegraphed the whole year in advance.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Knicks, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I don't really want Dolan to have any type of success in this regard.
Right.
But for the Knicks fans, I mean, yeah, sure. They deserve it a little bit.
That's true. Yeah, it feels like LeBron to LA in two ways. One, that it's been telegraphed the whole year. And two, that everyone doesn't believe it because it's like, well, that doesn't make any basketball sense. Like, why would you leave a team that's probably going to three-peat for a team that has the worst record in the NBA? But, like, with LeBron in LA, there were other factors aside from basketball that played in.
Right.
His family wanted to be in LA. He wanted to start his, like, entertainment mogul business. KD, we know, has been really into the Silicon Valley aspect of living in the Bay Area. So, like, maybe, you know, his business is headquartered in New York. They have, like, some office building there. I mean, it seems like he's looking past his NBA career and is like, how am I going to, you know, make the most money? That's I'm going to create some sort of business empire. So, to me,
he'll be 31 this year too.
Yeah,
like, people are forgetting that. We don't talk about that enough. Like, he's going to be 31.
Right. Yeah. He's not. I mean, he's going to be in the NBA for another at least half decade, if not decade. But
sure.
Like, he's definitely not, you know, the young prospect he was in the early 2010s. He's been here for a while, so I can understand in that regard if he's, you know, looking ahead. And if he does have a commitment lined up from not only Kyrie, but, like, you know, maybe not Kyrie, but Kemba or whoever, I get it, I guess. I mean, it makes no sense basketball-wise, but that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. It seems like it's just been telegraphed for too long that it's a lock.
Same with LeBron.
Yeah. I don't know if Kyrie's going to go there. I mean,
I have two reasons as to why he won't.
The market?
Like, no. So, okay. First of all and foremost, right, what shape is Madison Square Garden?
Well, maybe he can learn then. Maybe he can finally understand.
And what's the city called? The Big Apple. What shape is an apple?
Well played. I definitely thought you were going to go with, like, the contentious media relationship, but I am all here for flat earth jokes instead.
I honestly think he's actually the leading candidate to land with the Knicks.
More than KD?
If we disregard the rumor basis, right?
Okay.
I just think in terms of what we've seen, so far all we've seen from KD is basically one dust up with Draymond.
Right.
And then we heard that was squashed.
Yeah.
But it seems like with Kyrie, there's just been consistently issues with the entire roster, basically.
Right.
Like, and you know, him sending, you know, love letters to LeBron. Like, I miss you, basically. I just wouldn't be surprised at all for him to go seek something on his own that is... Yeah, his own entirely, because when he arrived in Boston, I know it was really presented as, oh, Kyrie has his own team.
Right.
He really didn't, though. Like, there were a lot of guys there already. People just assumed, oh, they're complimentary guys, so he still has his own team. But, I mean, Al Horford had the ball a lot. You know, Hayward was brought in. It didn't really work out the first year for obvious reasons. But, like, there are a lot of guys there. Tatum, Jaylen Brown, all in need of possessions. Terry Rozier trying to make a name for himself. And then the whole playoff run happened without him. Everything just seems so out of place for him right now. I would be very much surprised if he returned to Boston.
Yeah, that playoff run was, like, both the best and worst thing to happen to Boston, because all those young guys boosted their trade value significantly. But at the same time, now they're all pissed when they have to go into smaller roles. And Kyrie's trying to just be, like... the LeBron-esque leader. But you didn't enjoy him the other day throwing Brad Stevens under the bus when he was talking about, oh, well, every other team defends Kemba Walker this way, but we didn't, and he burns us every time.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, throw one of the best coaches in the league under the bus. That's great.
I know. Yeah. I still think they're going to the finals because I just can't quit that stupid team. But I really have enjoyed the entire season of dysfunction.
But let's talk about what you brought up, because that's the more interesting thing to talk about. Like, the contentious media relationship both of these guys have.
Yeah.
Why would you go there?
I don't know. I wonder if, like, the KD's gonna kind of make the New York media turn into how OKC, you know, like, OKC has the reputation of, like, really protecting its guys from,
oh yeah,
the media members, and, like, the Knicks have proven this year with Stephen Bondy that they'll try some, like, hard-handed or heavy-handed tactics and, like, ban reporters reporting negative things about the franchise. Like, James Dolan doesn't give a damn. So maybe he's just like, come here and we'll do whatever you want. Like, if you don't want to talk to reporters, that's fine. We'll take the fines. We don't care.
That's actually a legitimate selling point for KD, I think.
Yeah, it might be. I mean, I don't know that that's the case, but...
But, like, think about it. Like, we know his relationship with the media. If a team actually is out there and they tell him, you know what, we'll pay whatever fine that the league hands us in terms of you not being showing up for your media availability. Like, I think that's a huge, that's a huge argument.
Yeah.
You don't have to be in front of cameras.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I know they have, like, the league mandated you have to meet with reporters in these situations, but I don't know. I could easily see the Knicks trying to deflect that as much as possible if KD and Kyrie don't want to deal with it.
Oh my god, Kawhi Leonard, his ears would be burning
God.
If that happened.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's move on to the Phoenix Suns, Mort, the other true tanker out there in the West. Really the only, like, egregious tanker in the West. And they didn't even try to tank. They signed Trevor Ariza and thought they were going to be good this year. But
are you telling me Kobe and Shaq weren't trying to tank? Wasn't that the comp coming in?
Over Booker and Ayton, yeah. Young Kobe, yeah. Young Shaq. Well, Kobe declared himself the best player ever on James Corden last night. So
yes, I noticed.
Yeah, so Devin Booker has a bright future ahead of him. But, I mean,
I will say,
let's start with the positives. Like, Devin Booker is still a monster. He dropped 59 the other night. He's putting up 26 points a game on a terrible team. Like, every year that goes by that they still are terrible, you do have that creeping suspicion of, like, is he just a bad or a good stats, bad team kind of guy? But then I also, like, Bob Sarver is still the owner. I have no faith in their organizational infrastructure. Like, they might just be such a bad team that they can't put together a winning culture around him. But I think, like, Devin Booker is a legitimate star. I think DeAndre Ayton has, I mean, for a number one overall pick to be averaging 16-10, he's flown under the radar thanks to Luka and Trae Young, really. But, like, he's had a great rookie season.
He has, and part of that is he got better defensively as the year went on.
Yeah.
Like, he was a train wreck to start the season, where over the first, I think, 10 or 12 games, I was really concerned. I wasn't ready to throw the bus label at him, because that's just unfair on such a small sample size, but he looked so clueless that I legitimately sat there and thought, oh my god, how will he ever turn this around? It was so bad.
Yeah.
And somehow he just, I don't know what they did, but he's actually noticing cutters now. He has a reactive system towards them. Like, when he sees a cutter and he's the closest defender, he'll rotate over, but he won't over rotate, so he'll still stay close enough to his primary defender until another perimeter player will pick up the guy who was cutting. Mm-hmm. Like, he's beginning to get it. And absolutely, he's a long, long road. There's a long road until he's a plus defender. I don't necessarily think it's ever going to happen, but there is a world wherein that's now possible.
Yeah.
And that's tremendous for him. I don't remember having seen someone improve that significantly over a rookie season when it comes to defense. I really don't. So that's to his credit.
Yeah, and even if he's not ever a plus defender, he could be, like, an average defender, which is better than horrible defender, which is what it could look like he might be coming into the year. And then, as you said, through that first, like, 10 or 12 games, he was a horrible defender. And, you know, Booker is not exactly a great defender either. So the question was, like, can you build your team around these guys when neither of them could get a stop? But if Ayton develops in that degree, then maybe. Maybe you can.
I mean, look, he's 7'1", 250, 255. He's lean. He's athletic. He's got a long wingspan. I mean, from a physicality perspective, there's nothing holding him back.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Other positives from the Suns this year? Pick a wing, any wing.
Yeah, virtually. I mean, look, Kelly Oubre, I mean, look, 16.9 points, 4.9 rebounds per game ever since the trade, 40 games in for Phoenix. Blocking shots, swiping up steals, getting to the free throw line. His 3-point field goal percentage is still not quite there, but he's still taking 5 a game, almost draining 2. Mm-hmm. He's improving in a way where you're left thinking, oh, this is what the Wizards actually need.
Right.
So, yeah, that trade just still looks weird for Washington's perspective that they just didn't want to pay him.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate. But I like him in Phoenix, and now they need to figure out what they're going to do. Because if they're going to keep him, I think they need to trade TJ Warren, who's had a very, very good season. I mean, 18 points, 4 rebounds, 43% from downtown. And, you know, he came in as a non-shooter.
Right.
But, I mean, you need to pick a lane. And you also have Mikal Bridges. You know, he needs minutes. You need to figure out what you do with Josh Jackson. He's one of those guys I'm almost ready to say I'm out on.
Yeah. I think of the four, I would say he is the furthest behind for sure.
Yeah. That's very much fair. Because he's just... like he's everywhere at once, which can be good, but at times he's just so... I don't know how you can really describe his playing style. It seems like he wants to be great so badly, and I can appreciate that. I can truly appreciate that level of desire that he has to be good. But he's either forcing the issue, or he's just making weird decisions that comes back to haunt him later on. It's just... Like, if he just got a little bit more disciplined with his movement and with his decision-making, I think you could have something.
Yeah.
But right now, he seems like more of an energy player than a, you know, a foundational piece.
Right. So, I'm definitely with you on Warren. I mean, I think he's a good player. I think he's had a lot of injury issues the last couple of years, and I'd be hesitant to build around him. I think he's on such a reasonable contract that he should have some pretty good trade value. I mean, he's only owed $10.8 million heading into next season, which is, like, that's totally fine for a player of his caliber. I agree that they need to keep Kelly Oubre around because, you know, like, over his final 30 games, he averaged 19 points, almost 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.7 steals, 1.0 blocks, only 31 minutes a night. Like, kid was really, really good. I know he's out now for the rest of the season because he had a minor thumb surgery, but like he's been playing incredibly well for them, especially once he moved into the starting lineup after the trade deadline. Like he looks like a foundational piece to put next to Booker and Ayton. And then Bridges, I think he was never going to pop off the screen. Like he's one of those like quintessential role players who is not going to be a number one option, but like he's just the perfect like glue guy. And, I mean, that's... I don't know that that makes sense for a team like Phoenix to be adding players like him when you're still so far away from contending. I still think that trade was a little questionable on their end, given that, you know, that Miami pick ended up being a huge part of the reason Philly ended up getting Tobias Harris. But Bridges is really good. Like, I would happily... there isn't a day that goes by that I wish he wasn't still a Sixer. So I think they have a nice little core in place. Let's now look ahead because, you know, let's start with Oubre, who is a restricted free agent this summer. Where do you draw the line if you're Phoenix on if Oubre signed this offer sheet we can't match?
You know, I have this opinion that when you're a rebuilding team and you're just extending some young guys, it doesn't really matter if you overpay a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because you also have to assume that they get better as the contract ages.
Yeah.
Having said that, in Phoenix, you know, I have to wonder how many shots he'll get unless they figure out, like we talked about, the lockjam at the forward spots.
Yeah.
Because if they lock him up for big, big money, like say, you know, $20 million a year.
Right.
And he's like third or fourth on the forward depth chart, then they're not getting their money's worth, and he's not given an opportunity to further improve.
Yeah.
Because then he'll just be, you know, brought back to it. So it depends on the role that they envision of him moving forward.
Yeah. That's fair. I mean, I think, to your point, the good thing that's working for Phoenix is, you know, Devin Booker, his max contract starts next year, but Ayton has 3 more years on his rookie deal. Mikal Bridges has 3 more years on his rookie deal. Eli Okobo has 3 more years on his rookie deal. De'Anthony Melton signed for cheap for next year. You still have Josh Jackson. If you're not totally out on him, you still have him on his rookie deal for 2 more years. And TJ Warren's at that reasonable price. You have to assume Tyler Johnson is going to opt into his $19.2 million player option, but then he comes off the books after next season. So you do have a lot of cap flexibility, and if you do decide to move on from TJ Warren, that will free up even more. So yeah, like to your point, I think probably the line is somewhere around 4 years. I would be nervous to match 4 years, $80 million, or somewhere around where Zach LaVine got, just because, as you said, like, he doesn't profile as a top two option down the line. But if you could get him in like the 4 years, $60 million range,
I'd do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot for Kelly Oubre, but I think given his importance to the team moving forward, and given the, like, you're not going to get a free agent. You're not going to get a star free agent if you're Phoenix. You're going to have to overpay. You're going to have to do what you did with Trevor Ariza last year and give, like, the 1 or 2 year balloon deals, which is an option. And you could also preserve your cap space to accept salary dumps and get more draft picks. But at a certain point, you need to just start getting better. You've been bad for so long that you need to figure out, like, is Devin Booker, you know, can he lead a winning team, or is he just a bad, good team, bad stats guy? So, yeah, I think ideally you keep him in that 460 range, and that's fine.
Front loaded.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. I think the other big priority for Phoenix this summer is getting a point guard. And, you know, obviously Zion is the dream for every team we'll talk about today.
Yeah.
I think Ja Morant for them is probably number two on their board, or should be number two on their board.
Yeah. So in regards to Ja Morant, you know, I'm actually going on your friend of the podcast, Mark Karansoulis, who has the Bulls HQ podcast.
Sure.
I'm going on there this weekend to specifically talk about Ja Morant compared to other draft prospects. And one of the things that I'm going to talk about this weekend is Ja Morant needs a very specific setup so as the team can maximize his potential because he's a high usage player. Right now, Devin Booker is the de facto point guard in Phoenix. Like, yeah, he plays a hardened game. You know, he starts at the two, but he handles the ball a lot.
Yep.
Like, he's averaging almost 7 assists a game. You have DeAndre Ayton, who requires a lot of post touches and requires shots. You have T.J. Warren, who's taking 14 shots a game. You know, that situation may resolve itself, but still. Kelly Oubre, 13-plus shots a game. Josh Jackson takes a ton of shots as well. You have to assume that both Eli Okobo and De'Anthony Melton will get more shots, you know, moving forward. Mm-hmm. And that just leaves this problem where you're trying to slot a high usage player in at the point guard position where you're trying to figure out where does he get his shots.
Yeah.
Like, do we use Morant as solely a playmaker? Because if you use Morant solely as a playmaker and not as a guy who can come in and average 20, I think you put a ceiling on his potential, and I don't think you get the most out of him as a player. So I would look at him if I'm Phoenix, because, you know, theoretically, when you need a point guard and that's the best point guard in the class, you have to look at it.
Yeah.
But I would really have to sit down with my entire team and figure out what's the plan. Like, if we draft Ja Morant, what is the plan?
Yeah. So do you think, say they get the number two pick, do you think the optimal move then is to trade down to like 4 or 5 and go after a guy like Jarrett Culver or DeAndre Hunter?
If they decide that Morant simply, that you can't get the same out of Morant because of the presence of Booker, then yes, trading down in this draft or even trading out of this draft is the year to do it.
Yeah.
But and it's so funny you mentioned Jarrett Culver, because that's the other guy that I'm going to be talking about this weekend.
Yeah.
Culver would be a fantastic choice, especially if you can trade down for him, because then you get an additional asset in return. So you get Culver and an asset for the rights to Morant or whoever.
Yeah.
And if you can, that means that Phoenix can still gather some assets. And like, I know that you just said at some point they need to get better Yeah. I absolutely agree with that. But it never, never hurts to get additional assets in a deal because they can be moved at a later point if need be. And they're just not there.
Yeah.
So if they get Culver in, then they definitely need to move around a few wings. So I would be looking at Oubre, Jared Culver, and Mikal Bridges as the three primary wings. And then I'd try to move Josh Jackson and T.J. Warren probably.
Yeah, for me, I agree. It feels like Phoenix, if they don't get Zion and they end up at two or three and some team's in love with R.J. Barrett or John Morant, move down, get another first-round pick, ideally. It'll probably be some form of protection, top five, top ten, whatever. But it's still another asset for you to use and hopefully not trade recklessly. But yeah, right. I think that's the play. And then, like, really they could use a Patrick Beverley type at the point. They just need, like, a defensive bulldog. Like,
you're just bringing up all the names that I'm going to talk about this weekend, basically. Because it's so funny, because have you noticed the similarities in terms of Chicago and Phoenix's roster?
Yeah.
Like, we'll be talking about the Bulls later on today in this segment, and we can basically copy-paste everything
right
in terms of them, their situation.
Not that y'all should tune out when we talk about the Bulls, but...
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. No, stay tuned. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, before we reach the Bulls, let's start going to the Cleveland Cavaliers, who, if we're going to talk about things... Well, there are reasons for optimism, a little bit.
Yes, there are. Yeah.
Colin Sexton was horrible earlier in the year, but has really rounded into form as of late. Like, he's showing some promising flashes. I mean, you know, they played the Sixers recently, and the Sixers just didn't give a damn all game. And Colin Sexton took that personally. And really, I mean, the Sixers can't defend the point of attack all year. And Colin Sexton realized that and attacked relentlessly.
Are you telling me that a 20-year-old isn't a finished product, Brian?
I'm shocked. I'm really shocked. Yeah. Yeah. A 20-year-old who is playing with no talent for much of the year. Like, I don't think it's a coincidence that when Kevin Love comes back, all of a sudden Colin Sexton looks worlds better.
Yeah. Oh, I think that piece on The Athletic back then, yeah. I think it did him good in a way. Yeah. Like, I think he got pissed.
Yeah.
Because he seems to be just taking this personally, and not by trying to be someone who he isn't, right. Because he's a scorer, and we've talked about that so many times before. I think he just decided, you know what? I'm going to score the basketball. I'm going to play my game, but I'm just going to play it better.
Yeah.
I'm going to develop, and I'm going to take notes of what I'm seeing out on the court, and I'm going to use that to my advantage. And he has. He's getting a lot better at spotting driving lanes. He's getting a lot better at seeing where the court generally just opens up for him, even for a jump shot or a drive or whatever. Like,
yeah.
He's becoming multifaceted as a scorer, and that's going to help him in the long run. And if beat writers or teammates or the organization is crabbing on him for it, then that's on them. Like, mm-hmm. He's doing fine. And look, just a slight note. Remember when he came in to the league as a non-shooter with the rep of a non-shooter?
Yeah.
He's trained 105 triples this year on a 41.3% success rate. Right. And he's hitting 84 from the line. Let's stop calling him a non-shooter.
He broke Kyrie's record, I think, for the most threes as a rookie, as a Cavs rookie.
Oh, really?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like... Is it ideal that he's averaging so few assists per game? Obviously not. You want your point guard to average more than 2.8 assists, but
right,
that will come in time. I mean, I think the strides he's taken over the past 2 months should really be encouraging to Cleveland fans who, were most of them, I'm assuming, are not even watching this season, because what was the point after LeBron left? Like, you knew this was going to be a lost season, and they still have a lot of work to do to dig out of the mess that LeBron left. But Colin Sexton's a good start. Like, if that's, that was the other primary return from the Kyrie trade, and, like, that trade looked horrible in retrospect, but at least it's not a total bust, because Colin Sexton does give them a player to build around moving forward.
Right. Quick note, the Cavs have played 27 different players this year.
Wow. This is like a process Sixers list.
That's like two full NBA rosters in the same year.
I mean, some of the names on this list. Cam Payne got 9 games.
Yep.
Ooh, buddy. Right. Pat McCaw.
3 games.
Yeah. Good.
Kobe Simmons, 1.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Oh, man. I think Chetty Osmond, too. Another reason to be optimistic in Cleveland. And Kevin Love, look, he's not played all that well in terms of his efficiency. He was out for most of the year with that injury. But, again, just since coming back, I think his presence really does help the young kids. I know, like, we still think that extension was a little a little eyebrow-raising. But it gives them some semblance of a foundation to build around moving forward. I still don't think he's part of their, like, long-term future. I think in a year or two that you probably look to flip him for whatever you can, just because, you know, what's the point of having a 30-plus-year-old Kevin Love with a bunch of young kids? But for now, they were a complete tire fire without him, and they're still not great, but they're at least competitive with him. They're losing a lot of games, but they're competitive.
I would agree with all of that, and I don't even think they should have done the extension, but, I mean, look, you're saying we've raised some eyebrows. I'm misremembering then, because we were very loud when we saw that.
That's true. That is correct.
Yeah.
So, like, looking ahead for the Cavs, their salary cap sheet is a disaster next season. They still have Tristan Thompson under contract for one more year, Brandon Knight, Jordan Clarkson, John Henson, Dele. J.R. Smith is under contract for about $15.7 million, but only $3.9 is fully guaranteed until June 30th. So
he's going to be off.
Yeah, let's start with him, because he's been exiled for much of the season. He's the guy who you can flip and then, you know, flip him ahead of the draft to a team that needs cap space, and then they can waive him, and it's, you know, they cleared almost $12 million from their books. So if you're the Cavs, what are you looking for when you're trying to dangle J.R. Smith in trade talks?
Talent. Just some sort of talent. It is. Look, they're at that point now where they shouldn't even be focusing on, like, hey, let's find a good wing, or let's find a good guard, or a good big. Doesn't matter. Just find talent regardless of position.
Yeah.
Like, if we're talking about, like, asset accumulation mode, that's what they should be in right now. Doesn't matter. Just find something that's interesting and that has a chance to grow, regardless of what it is.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Ed, would you do some combination of young talent and picks to take back bad money?
Sure. If the cap sheet allows for it, yeah.
Yeah. I think
they should do everything they can. I mean, look, they should be calling up whoever has a bad contract and say, we'll take it. We will take it immediately. Just give us a pick.
Right. Well, because they do have, I mean, they have a lot of expirings now. And, like, those guys didn't have as much trade value last year. But now moving forward, if a team has a contract with 3 years left on the books that they have no interest in paying out, you know, take on a year of Jordan Clarkson, and you can clear space 2 years earlier. Like, this is kind of the Cavs, not only summer, because they can do it up to the trade deadline, but, like, this is the next 10 months or so is their time to really strike and, you know, get the assets that, like, they're not going to attract free agents. It's much like Phoenix. Right. So cap space doesn't
matter. I don't think they should make that trade now, though.
Which
because trade? Well, like take on a long-term contract, because here's the thing, last year you didn't have a lot of long-term contracts because everyone kind of waited for this year.
Right.
So identify after free agency what teams made a mistake. Like if some team out there signed someone for 4 years and it just looks like a complete tire fire as soon as they even signed the player.
Yeah.
Like hang on and wait for trade deadline in 2020.
Yeah. Right, that's what I was saying. Like they could go on up until next February and still move some of those guys. But like if Kemba Walker leaves the Hornets, they're the first team I'm calling. And I'm saying, oh, we'll take Nick Batum. We don't care. Just give us something in return.
Yeah, yep. I wonder if the Hornets are even looking at that, though. in terms of giving up an asset, because losing Kemba means they have nothing. Like, they have Miles Bridges and nothing. And if they give up a draft pick, oh, good heavens.
Right.
I mean, then I wonder if they're so bad that they're just willing to, you know, say, screw it, let's just live out those contracts.
I would hope so. I mean, most of them expire after next season, I think.
Exactly.
Batum is the only one, and Cody Zeller.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
God. Yeah. Well, I think that is definitely the play for Cleveland moving forward, is kind of dangling a lot of these guys. I mean, knowing Cleveland's luck, they're going to win the lottery again for like the 10th time this decade, and they're going to get Zion.
Ugh.
That'd be fun. I wouldn't hate that.
All right, I would. But, and I would also hate the 55 accompanying, you know, the articles from every outlet saying the game is rigged.
Oh, yeah.
Because that will show up.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, that's not, Cleveland is not my favorite Zion destination by any stretch, but I would much rather he go there than New York or Phoenix.
Yeah, okay, that I agree with. Yeah.
Although, I guess
That's the ownership angle, though.
Right, but I guess Dan Gilbert's not much better, actually.
I was just about to say, you know.
That's true. All right, boy, you want to finish things off with the Chicago Bulls?
Well, I mean, obviously, Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah.
Lauri Markkanen took a step forward. Zach LaVine took a step forward. Those two have been playing very well, especially as of late. Markkanen has gone a little bit down in the slump now. He's very fatigued, so his numbers dipped a little bit, but he came off in February where he averaged like 26 and 12.
Yeah.
He showed some legitimate star potential.
Can you tell him to get over whatever illness he left with last night? Because he's murdering my fantasy team. We're in the championship.
Yeah, I know. I think the Bulls are sneakily tanking right now.
Right.
Just sitting everyone. Yeah. But like the addition of Otto Porter was really great for him. He's only played 15 games with the Bulls this year, and yet you can still feel his impact. Like he's shooting 48% from the field, almost 49% from three, and 90% from the line. He's been way better in terms of handling the basketball. Like, his father came out and said, you know, it was necessary for him to get out of Washington. Like, he was just standing around, not doing anything. They really didn't use him correctly.
Yeah.
And, you know, that turns out to be very much true. Porter is, like, handling the basketball in pick-and-roll situations. He's being moved up to play center here and there in small lineups. Like, he's really been intriguing to watch overall. It's like a guy who just rediscovered himself as a basketball player. And you love to see that. I mean, you really love to see that. So I think moving forward, the LaVine, Porter, Markkanen, and hopefully Wendell Carter Jr. lineup should be, you know, a thing. And then you can argue you need a new point guard.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Chris Dunn is just not up for the challenge. I think that's completely fair to say. But here's the thing. If they get Zion, I would just start LaVine at the two.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Ricky talked about that now that I remember it as well. Like, just moving in there, it doesn't matter. And the same could be said for Jared Culver. Like, basically, the Bulls can't really go wrong in this draft, whoever they choose.
Yeah, assuming they don't slip so far that they take Cam Reddish.
Oh, no, yeah. That. All right, that's fair. Cam Reddish is one of those guys. But you know what I mean, though? They finally placed themselves in a position where whatever happens in the draft, they can't really go all wrong. I mean, even if they get Morant, like, and again, same exact concerns apply to Morant in Chicago as they did in Phoenix, as I outlined previously, because you have high volume guys there already, so you have to wonder whether you can get, you know, optimized production out of Morant in Chicago.
Yeah.
But if they choose him, like, no skin off my nose, that'd be interesting.
It's interesting because, like, really, all of the teams at the very top of the lottery, if the Knicks get Kyrie, or even if they don't, if they like really feel that strongly about Dennis Smith Jr., it's like a lot of these teams don't necessarily need Morant. So I feel like like the Wizards could use him just because you can't bank on John Wall moving forward. You know, he's not going to slip to the Hornets, but like the Hornets could use him if Kemba leaves. Like the Grizzlies could use him as the Mike Conley replacement. But, like, I do wonder if he either slips a little bit further than we think he's going to, or know, maybe.
Well, it depends how the lottery shakes out, right, obviously.
Right. But, like, you know, if it held to form, it feels like a lot of these top teams don't actually need him. And if they're prioritizing fit over best player available, which is not necessarily often advisable, you know, right. I could see him slipping a little bit further than we expect. But I'm glad.
Cleveland would probably take him in a heartbeat.
Who would?
Cleveland. And then move Colin Sexton to the two.
Yeah, that's true,
and just
actually
run all day long.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. I wouldn't hate that.
Yeah.
And Cleveland would be in that situation that I talked about. Whereas, you know, Moran can actually be the guy with the high usage rate.
Right.
Where you actually benefit both from the playmaking and the scoring.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're not sold on Sexton as, like, a full-time point guard and you think he could be fine in a secondary ball handler role, but you're
right,
like, more confident in his scoring ability than you were, and shooting. I mean, as you said, he's shooting above 40% from the three this year.
That's, yeah. So you have if you have Moran setting him up, that's only going to get better, right?
Yeah.
Like, theoretically. Yeah.
Yeah, you would think. Yeah. I mean, I'm glad for the Bulls that you mentioned Wendell Carter. I feel like he's going to, both him and Jaren Jackson, because they missed, you know, a lot of the end of the season with injuries, that they're going to go under the radar, especially when we're starting to talk about, like, all rookie teams and stuff. But, like, both of those guys were great this year. Wendell Carter, he's a legitimate, like, the Bulls should be very confident moving forward in marketing Carter as their starting front court, I think.
I fully agree. I mean, look, this is a guy who came in as a 19-year-old rookie and was arguably the team's best defender.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second.
Right.
I mean, that's I know the Bulls are horrific defensively, but it doesn't matter. When you are on a roster of veteran NBA players, and you as a 19-year-old, you know, turns out to be the best defensive player, that's just a terrific ability to you know, prove yourself that I'm actually this good.
Yeah.
I'm actually a game changer. I'm one of those guys who can come in and block shots, change the entire, you know, defensive scheme, and for having offenses try to divert me. I mean, he did everything, man. I mean, he looked at times like as a future DPOY player.
Yeah, well, because Markkanen missed a lot at the beginning of the season, so, like, Carter was one of their bright spots early on. It was, like, him and Levine.
Yes.
You know, Levine has been a bright spot all year, but, like, Carter was a bright spot for the first part, and then Markkanen comes back, and it's like, oh, yeah, Laurie Markkanen's actually really good, too. And then they get out of Porter. It's like, oh, wait, they have a wing in the right position. Now this team makes sense. Like, two through five, you have your starting lineup in place, and this could be actually very good. Now, as you said, you just need to figure out that one spot. So, I mean, it does sound like you're out of the Chris Dunn experiment. I don't want to steal Bulls HQ's thunder here, but you mentioned Patrick Beverley, I'm guessing, is one of your free agent targets this summer.
Yeah, so Bulls brass has, or at least Bulls fans, have talked a lot about Ricky Rubio, and he's also been mentioned in articles as one that the Bulls brass, you know, guard packs are looking at.
Yeah,
I get it. I actually get it. I get the idea behind it, because he's a defensive ace, and he's a playmaker, and he doesn't require a lot of shots, and he's got great leadership abilities. I completely get it on that surface.
Sure.
And he's also an improved three-point shooter. But Patrick Beverley is just, he's just got a different dynamic that I think fits this team better.
Right.
Like, he's a better shooter, and he's also a quicker shooter, which matters in the grand scheme of things. He's a better on-ball defender, I would argue. He's just more disruptive, at least. And he's one of those guys who'll just, if he deems it necessary, he'll pick you up 94 feet.
Yeah.
And I think you need that dog, honestly.
Right.
And Chris Dunn, like, don't be mistaken, Chris Dunn is a great defender, but that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, you can't use just that. Whereas he's also trying to, like, discover himself in the NBA, so he's taking a lot of shots and he's trying to figure out, okay, if I assert myself offensively here, and then he doesn't. Beverley knows who he is.
Mm-hmm.
He knows he's not going to average 20. He's going to come in, he's going to hit a couple threes, and he's going to play hard-nosed defense. He's going to help out on the glass. And he's not, like, the, you know, primary playmaker. Like, that responsibility will fall to, you know, Zach LaVine and Wendell Carter Jr., Otto Porter, and actually Laurie Markkanen, who proved that he can be a passing hub when you use him correctly. So I think it's all about having that shared responsibility mindset going into next season.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm looking at the list of 2019 free agent point guards, including guys who could turn down options. And it really does thin out pretty quickly. It's like Irving,
yeah,
Rubio, Walker, Goran Dragic, if he turns down his $17 million player option, which I'm assuming he probably will, just to lock in one more long-term deal.
Yeah, but he just doesn't make sense because he's right. He takes a lot of shots. He's outside the age group. Yep. Like, yeah.
Darren Collison.
Yeah, he's been brought up as well. I'm not seeing the appeal. He's 6 foot nothing.
Yeah.
Like, you need to have some size. And I get that Patrick Beverley is not much taller, but he's thicker.
Yeah.
And he's more explosive, so that matters a lot.
Are you on board the Derrick Rose train? Bring Derrick Rose back to
Chicago? I am not. Yeah. No, I am not. I don't think... Look, so Derrick Rose has had one good month this year.
Yeah.
This season. And people are rolling with it like he's been on fire since the start of the season.
Right. So they will... The Bulls most likely will have somewhere in the neighborhood of 20-some million in cap space once you factor in their first-round pick. So they could get frisky. Right. I want to ask you about two restricted free agents.
Mm-hmm.
One, D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah.
Would you go after him?
If he's available. I mean, I have a feeling that the Nets are going to match everything.
I would hope so. But, like, would you blow your whole cap load on him?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I would too. If I'm the Bulls.
I understand that it's going to be tricky because there are so many, and I just mentioned that, you know, not taking Morant means I wouldn't necessarily take Morant. I don't know if I would or not. I mean, I'd be okay with it, but I wouldn't aggressively pursue it.
Sure.
Because, you know, a lot of shots and all that. And then D'Angelo Russell comes in and he's also a shot maker and a shot taker.
Yeah.
But I think when you just combine that amount of talent,
yeah,
like, then it doesn't matter. Like, he's just so far. He's an all-star for crying out loud.
Yeah.
He's a very, very good player. And I think, with the right coach and with the right mindset, like, defensively, he can improve.
Yeah.
But he's also a fantastic passer. Like, that's get lost in translation with Russell a lot. Like, he's fantastic at passing the ball and initiating the offense. So if you have Russell and LaVine in the backcourt, and you have Markkanen and Carter up front, and then you have, you know, Otto Porter, all of those five guys can, in some capacity, initiate the offense.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be really fun. But I'm with you. I do think the Nets match whatever offer she receives up to a max. So I don't think it's a realistic thing. Malcolm Brogdon, I think he's an interesting one.
He's been brought up a lot.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the Bucks they have a lot of free agents this year. They locked up Eric Bledsoe, right, but they still have Nico, Brook Lopez, Chris Middleton, Brogdon. Brogdon's a restricted, so they can match whatever he gets, but... Right. At a certain point, they're going to run into some luxury tax concerns. They also do have to be mindful of Giannis as a free agent in 2 years. You can't piss him off by letting a lot of guys go. But I feel like if Brogdon's offer sheet is high enough, you could at least make Milwaukee think about it before instant matching. So
yeah,
would you go after Brogdon?
In that case, depending on where the Bulls are selecting in the draft, I'd probably go with Morant instead and then take... Then accept the fact that he's probably not going to be as productive in Chicago as he would elsewhere. Because Brogdon, as great as he is, and Brogdon is great, he's I think 26 already.
Yeah.
And the thing is, he's never going to be a necessarily high-volume player, which is fine, but then you have to wonder, if I'm a team that's dedicating like 20% of my entire cap to this guy, or close to it,
mm-hmm,
and he's consistently a guy who scores like between 13 and 15 points, and, you know, not providing a hell of a lot more offensively, he's a good defender, I'll give him that, then you have to wonder if, am I getting full bang for the buck?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I think that's important. It's, you can overpay guys who are absolutely great or not even overpay. You can give guys market value, but if you put a market value guy onto a team where he's not going to get the necessary shots and the necessary role, then you actually end up overpaying him because then you're paying him to be a luxury asset.
Yeah.
And I think Brogdon could slip into that category really, really quickly.
I could see that for sure. I would not max him if I'm the Bulls by any means, but...
Oh, yeah, no, not maxing.
Yeah, but if you could get him somewhere around what LaVine signed for, I think it's at least intriguing. because not only are you then weakening Milwaukee, but you are strengthening yourself. I think you could, you know, he's 6'5", he's big, so you could put him as the de facto point guard, but like have
right.
LaVine really operate the offense. I mean, he's in the 50-40-90 club this year. He's good in an off-ball role. He's a good defender. I don't know. I think
major wingspan too.
Yeah, I think it's at least intriguing that, you know, he would be more than Russell, because I just don't think that's realistic. Like if I'm the Bulls, he's right. probably the guy who I'm really going after, as you said, depending on how the draft shakes out or whatever. But
right. But if it's that price you just mentioned, like yeah. the LaVine type of contract,
yeah.
then that changes things. Like if it's the max, no way. I think that's where it gets problematic.
Yeah.
But yeah, if it's in the $18 to $19 million range,
yeah.
I think then that becomes more realistic, because then you're paying a guy maybe a little bit under market value.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's good.
Yeah.
Or at least market value, but not significantly over market value, to the point where if he has a drop off in production because so many other players on the roster can produce points,
right.
then it's not as big of a loss because you're not paying him like max money.
Yeah, I mean, I think it might even be slightly over market value, but if he and LaVine are on the same contract, I feel like you could, well, I don't know, maybe they're probably right around the same range, but it seems like it would be a good way to round out their starting five. Then you can move Chris down to the bench and like round out your reserves, however, you know, whatever. But you still
right, especially if they get Culver in the draft.
Yeah, exactly. And you still have Markkanen and Carter for cheap for a couple more seasons. So like the damage that a Malcolm Brogdon 4-year big contract would do to another team doesn't really apply to the Bulls, because they're not going to bump into luxury tax concerns until Markkanen and Carter right. are re-signed on their post-rookie deals. And you don't have to worry about that for another few years.
I would definitely dig a Bulls offseason that brought them in Brogdon and Jared Culver in the draft.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
I think the route that they're going, I think they're absolutely in love with Morant and will even go as far as trading up for him. I wouldn't trade up for Morant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't trade up for Morant. I wouldn't go for that.
Yeah.
But I think that's ultimately is what's going to happen if they, you know, finish with the fourth or receive the fourth or fifth pick or something. Ooh. I think they're going to try to trade up for Morant, and then I think they're going to sign Beverly to be like the mentor.
Yeah.
And then go from there. But personally, like, I would have no problem going after someone in the restricted free agency market, at least assuming, you know, it's realistic to get them.
Right.
Because it just wasting time doesn't help anyone.
Yeah.
And yeah, if they could walk away with Malcolm Brogdon and Jared Culver without giving up any one of the main core,
yeah,
that's a good offseason. That's sure. absolutely a good offseason. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Beverly's going to be one of those guys who, like, every fan base, and Danny Green's going to be the same way. Like, every fan base is going to be like, oh, yeah, he's the perfect guy for our offseason. We should totally get him for, like, $8 million a year. And then because every team wants him, he's going to get paid a lot more than people think he will. Like, maybe it's still only a balloon deal, but I also kind of think Beverly just stays with the Clippers. I mean, he seems to really like it there. And if they get Kawhi, like, why would he yeah. leave?
That's true. That's true. Yeah, and it's Los Angeles, man. I mean, we can't. It's warm weather. It's, you know, it's Hollywood. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah, yeah. It's gonna be an interesting summer, to say the least. So I think that's a good place to wrap up. We will be back with more By Felicia soon. We'll also in the coming weeks have our season award picks. We'll do our playoff predictions once we get a little closer and the bracket is locked. So a lot to look forward to. We're almost done the regular season, and the real fun begins soon. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Feel better.
Thank you.